Okay, everybody, I guess we're ready to get on the stream, right?
Yes.
All right. Yes, go ahead, Otis. Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Heather Gray, and I'm chair of the Pacifica Programming Committee, and I want to welcome everyone to our meeting this afternoon. So I'd like to, what I'd like to do first before we go forward with the meeting is to get an identification or who's on the call this afternoon. So I'm Heather Gray. I'm an affiliate director on the Pacifica board, and I'm with WRC in Atlanta, Georgia. So who else do we have? Ike Barrowfield, go ahead.
I'm Philip Moldery, a listener rep on the station board of KPFA.
I'm Fred Dodsworth. I'm the LSB representative to the program committee from KPFA.
I'm Ziri Rideau from KPFK, station board.
Okay, this is Grace Aaron, local station board member at KPFK.
This is Wally James, listener rep from KPFT.
Sir Philip?
Wally James.
No, Wally James, thank you. Have we heard from everyone?
We haven't heard from Jim Dingman, I don't think.
Jim?
Well, I'm Jim Dingman. I'm a listener rep from WBA Radio in New York.
Egberto Willis, KPFT rep.
Who is that? Who?
Egberto Willis, KPFT rep.
Thank you, Egberto. Thank you. Have we heard from everyone then? All right, everyone. I want to thank you so much for joining us for the meeting this afternoon. We have a lot to discuss, I know, and one of the critical issues first on the agenda, actually, or probably the major thing on the agenda, is to discuss the programming that we would like to do on Pacifica stations that would help us address some of the financial issues that Pacifica is having right now. So I would appreciate some help on how to begin that discussion from someone. Jim, why don't you start that?
All right. My name is Jim Dingman. I'm from WBI Radio. I have chaired this committee in the past, and I have been on the program council in New York when it was just in the early 90s. There's much that we can learn from each other, particularly the stations that are doing well. I don't know if we have people from PFW today. I'm glad we have people from KPFA. All the stations they have tremendous problems, particularly three, that is KPFK, KPFT, and New York, in terms of really realizing the potentials that they have to have their programming essentially capture large amounts of people listening to them. I think the Weekly Cume in Los Angeles is about 80,000. In New York, it's about 80,000. I'm not sure if KPFT, I've seen numbers fluctuate between 15,000 and 60,000 to 70,000. PFW and KPFA, in terms of their markets, are doing better than the other stations and are more fiscally stable than the other stations. The situation in Los Angeles is particularly difficult because we've never had a situation where three stations simultaneously over the past few years have these level of financial problems. My feeling about it is that it is, there are immediate cash problems that are facing us right now. That is that there is possibilities of payroll and other basic expenses not being met in the next couple of weeks. And so the cash crunch is immediate. So one problem is how do we figure out ways to jumpstart the stations that are weak right now? And how do we do that? And then in the short term, the problem, I think, from my perspective, having, been dealing with this issue for 30 years, is that the programming has essentially declined in its resonance throughout the network. It's gone down by, I estimate, 70 to 80% from the amount of people we have listening in 2000 to now. And some stations have large amounts of their airtime that have shows that raise literally peanuts when it comes to fundraising, even though, of course, some of them fall within the mission. And it's always been a problem, that contradiction. The other issue is that we just had a petition made to the Federal Communications Commission questioning the license of the station in New York and the question of its dependence on Gary Null and Christine Blasdale and other shows like that. And having been involved in these debates in New York for 30 years, at one point Gary Null had 17,000 people an hour listening to him. He was responsible in the early 90s for 50 to 60% of the gross revenue in New York. And at that time, nobody was preventing any public affairs shows or other shows from raising enough money or creating their audiences of 5 to 10 or 15,000. Nobody stopped anybody for the past 30 years. The only show that broke away and did that and became a national show was Democracy Now, which was I was there at when it was created, as I think others were. I think Philip was, obviously, he goes way back to that period of time. And that show was created with the subsidy of $600,000 from the National Board, and also that money was used for Julian Malveaux. So the problem is we don't have any money right now. So a lot of this depends on how creative we can get to figure out how to jumpstart or alter the program grids at each station. And I've listened to all the arguments about this for 30 years. At this point, I must admit my patience is gone. There has to be radical change now in order to survive, and I don't want to see any station get swapped, any station get sold, any station get turned into repeater stations. If stations are to be turned into repeater stations, it is frankly an admittance of defeat on the part of all of us involved to have allowed this to go on so far. So we have an opportunity right now to change it around. And I think we have to, you know, be part of that process in this committee. Thanks.
Thanks so much for that, Jim. So I'm sure there are comments others would like to make. Who would like to speak now, actually?
This is Philip. I would like to speak.
Go ahead, Philip.
Philip from KPFA. So obviously Democracy Now! Is a huge success, and KPFA plays it twice, once at 6 a.m., California time and once at 9, and it is a huge draw, and I encourage other stations, why not play it twice? KPFK plays it once, BAI plays it once, why not play it twice? With regard to Gary Null and Blasdale, the complaint to the FCC just mentioned is about payola. Gary Null has become a multimillionaire by selling his products on WBAI. Now, everybody in the network has premiums, and premiums are thank you gifts. KPFA is in fundraising right now. We have thank you gifts. But we have a rule of thumb that the thank you gift cannot cost the station more than 10% of what the listener is paying as a membership donation to the station. So if we're offering a book, say we have to pay $20 for the book, we insist on charging the listener $200. With regard to the Gary Null premiums, he is in fact selling the premiums to the station, and the listeners are essentially getting these premiums with the station getting something like 20% of the take instead of 90% of the take. So Gary Null might have a huge audience. He also might raise a huge amount of revenue. But subtract from that revenue the amount of money he is charging for those premiums, and that money goes directly into his pocket. This is fraud. And this has continued for years. And the FCC is now on the case. CPB was on the case. In fact, they wrote up and talked about this in the documents that we've circulated about how we lost CPB funding. So I think people have to realize that that the Gary Null model is going to come to an end, and we need to get back to the Pacifica principles of what this foundation was founded about, not lining the pockets of a charlatan like Gary Null.
Well, thanks for that, Philip. Any other comments from someone about Gary?
Yeah, this is Grace. I have a comment, but
go ahead, Grace.
Okay. I was the chair of the board in 2009 and also the interim executive director at that time for 10 months in 2009. And the station started to complain about reduced revenue from Democracy Now! Way back then. KPFT complained about it. Many of the stations complained about Democracy Now! Not bringing in less and less and less revenue. Here at KPFK, Democracy Now!, which airs at 8 a.m., which is morning drive time, does not bring in a huge amount of money. That's partially because Democracy Now! Is on one of our public TV stations at 7 a.m., and so a lot of people just switch to watching it on TV. And it's simply not performing very well for us in our fund drives. The signal areas are very different one from another. The demographics of KPFA will support a different type of programming than the demographics at the other stations, theoretically at least. And I think it's practically speaking the truth. KPFT and WPFW get about two-thirds of their income from music, not from public affairs. KPFA, I believe, is mainly a public affairs-oriented station. WBAI and KPFK receive about 50% of their income. This is a rough estimate, but 50% of their income from health and spirituality, and that's been for the last 10 years at least. We do not get the majority of our income from public affairs. I'm sorry, but the public affairs programming just does not perform that well in our fund drives. Now, KPFA is very different, but as I say, the demographics of the signal areas are very different. We can't switch the model at WPFW, for instance, we can't like X out the music and expect that station to have the same revenue it does now, because it's supported mainly by its music income. So is the effort to, can we deal with the Gary Null situation in a logical way so that it doesn't destroy WBAI? You just simply, as responsible individuals, obviously Gary Null's programming resonates with the audience. Christine Blasdale, the health and spirituality, we have a number of programmers at KPFK who promote premiums that have to do with health and spirituality. For instance, we have very popular, Roy Tuckman is a very, very popular programmer who brings in a lot of income. He airs on KPFK from midnight to 6 a.m. four nights a week. And he has very high listenership, and mainly income from Roy's show comes in because of Gary Null. He does air Gary Null sometimes in the middle of the night, and from Alan Watts, believe it or not. Now, Alan Watts died in 1975, but most of Roy's income comes from that sort of quasi-spiritual tapes that are still very, very, very popular. So to say that we have to look at a 50% decrease in income because people at KPFA think we are not allowed to have that audience of health and spirituality at either KPFK or WBAI, why don't you help the station figure out how to make it kosher, or how to, and also to phase off it. You just don't go cold turkey and kill the patient, you know? It's not a rational or collegial way to go about things. Gary Noll has been aired on Pacifica. I am not necessarily a Gary Noll fan. I just want to see WBAI and KPFK survive, not to have 50% of the income just evaporated because somebody doesn't like something, you know, or some clique of people thinks that the KPFA model will work at the other stations, which it will not. We are, each station is different and unique. Gary Noll has been a fixture in Pacifica for at least 30 years. So, and he has a huge audience. So I don't know, is the intent to purify Pacifica, or is it to push it to non-existence? Because getting rid of 50% of the income stream at two stations, I don't see as a favorable or beneficial plan, personally.
Yeah, have you heard?
So thanks for that, Gray.
Ziri, I would like to say something, and I was actually before Grace. This is Ziri.
Ziri, hold on a sec. Egberto came first, I think, and then we'll go to you, okay?
Go ahead, Grace.
If Ziri is more urgent, I don't mind acquiescing to her going first.
What the previous people said.
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is Ziri from KPFK. So I felt also slightly offended by what Philip from KPFA said about Gary Noll calling him a charlatan. You know, I've been tired of talking about any kind of spirituality or health programming as selling snake oil. This is a really inappropriate way about talking about stuff that's in the LA community important, you know, and this is exactly what Grace said. We have a very different group of listeners here. And I, for my part, would rather have a little more of Gary Noll in Los Angeles and on KPFK than less. And I feel it's extremely unfortunate that the New Day crowd right now brings this suit against it, you know, trying to discredit Gary Noll and Christine Blasdale and take this away. I feel this is a extremely... it's not only uncouth, but it's really unstrategic. I mean, in their sense, if they want to shut down KPFK, it could be a successful plan. But I hope we're all here to wanting to rescue not just KPFK and the New York station. And so I feel that we need to find a different way of talking about this kind of programming. And also, as Grace said, why don't you help making it, I wouldn't say kosher, because this has been going on since such a long time in so many different stations. We could as well, in some retaliatory way, see what kind of grants KPFA is getting in Berkeley and if they are actually aligned with our mission, which is also not the case. So instead of attacking each other, let's help each other to find stuff so we're in compliance with a general mission and cater to our specific audiences. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Jerry.
Interesting. I want to come from the point of view of being a newcomer on the board, not very many people know who I am. I'm from KPFT, et cetera. I know nothing about what the young man, Gary Noll, does in New York, sells or whatever. I hear rumors about folks getting rich off of the airwaves, et cetera. The truth of the matter is, as long as there's no illegalities going on, I really don't care, and I think too often, too much effort they spend on what I call testosteronic ideas. In other words, I want my way, he wants his way, everybody wants their way. I was not a fanatic of coming to the board. I came to the board because folks says we needed people to, who really wanted to make forward progress. And since you believe in all, having everybody get along, that's why I said I will go ahead and be a part of the team. I am with the previous speaker, who said we should start looking at the positivity. I'm for everybody dropping every friggin' suit there is because it makes absolutely no sense that somebody that with an entity that is in deep crap right now is spending a whole lot of money on legal fees. It really makes no sense. And if, you know, there's a, and please give me a little bit of leeway to talk if you don't mind. If I go a little bit over, please forgive me. But there's an interesting thing, right? And I don't know how many people are religious. I'm not. I'm a humanist. But I grew up in the church. And I remember this thing about how do you figure out who is the mother of the baby, the real mother of the baby? When the king said, I'm going to split the baby in half, give you your half, and give the other person their half, the real mother said, okay, I acquiesce to you guys. Take the baby. Because she knew that cutting the baby in half would kill the baby. That's how I feel about the issues that I don't understand, but that I know I want Pacifica to survive. In other words, if Garinal is first of all, we are also five stations run by a national board, but that we always claim we want local control. If New York has some way of doing things, and again, like I said, I may be naive, but if New York has ways of doing things, if it's not illegal but it's sour to me, who the hell am I to tell New York what to do? If I'm in Houston, I know certain changes that I would like to ask our folks to make in Houston. They may shoot it down. They may not. But if the majority of the people shoot it down, I'll keep my butt quiet and go with the things. I find what I've started to listen into, now that I'm starting on the inside, is everybody wants their way, and if they don't get their way, they file a suit. And this goes in all parts. We're giving away so much money from what I've understood. The people who are doing absolutely nothing for Pacifica because somebody didn't like what somebody else did and they filed a suit. So on the programming committee, I have been listening to Brother Dingman for a while. He's saying that he's been pushing some stuff for a very long time, for decades. Some of the stuff that he's mentioned I thought are great ideas. I think we should proceed from that point of view. I am not personally going to be entertaining going at anything that I may not like, but as long as it's legal, I'll be quiet. And that's all I want to say. So I'm here to be constructive, and I'm here to serve, and I'm here to do whatever folks think is going to move us forward.
So thank you for that. So I hear everyone, one of the purposes of the putting this on the agenda today and have people talking about programs is that we need to figure out a way, I think, that we can encourage the development of programs around the country that in the Pacifica stations that are popular, that will raise money for Pacifica. So I know that's what people have been saying to a degree, and talking about Gary Null raising a lot of money at WBAI and so forth. But, and then Grace talked about health and spirituality programs, at KPFK being popular. But I think we need to have a better sense of that so that we can share something with Pacifica Board to encourage programs across the country. So I don't know if that makes sense. But is there anyone else who would like to speak to that? What kind of programs, what can we do to encourage more contributions to Pacifica? So I know that's a difficult agenda, actually. But because there are so many wonderful programs, in my opinion, already on Pacifica, but they are not perhaps raising the money that we need. So any ideas?
I know I spoke already, but
okay. So, Egberto, thank you. So, go ahead a little bit, and I think. And
yeah,
I
just a short one. Just a short one.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I think we need audience, right? I mean, it's which comes first, the egg or the chicken? So, in my humble opinion, I think we have to have some real promotions to let people know we exist, because those who know we exist, but we've tapped them out like, you know, you tap the rubber tree, and after a while, there's no more. We have to build the audience, as many others have said. So I think there's some advertising and sort of stuff that we need to do. We have some ideas with how to use Houston, our new growth, to bring all other stations in, but that's just for the future, I guess.
Well, thank you. Other comments?
Yes.
Who is that? Yes, go ahead.
APFK, hi. I agree that advertisement would be an amazing thing to put people even in awareness of us, but where programming is concerned,
On our last meeting, I made the suggestion that I think we need for the evening or afternoon drive time something like what already exists in podcast form. For example, right now you have the Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal, or you have Pushback with Aaron Maté. These are formats which are very similar to what Ian Masters did. They just come from, I think, a much more Pacifica-like mindset. So they're not some neoliberal anti-Russian bashing, but they give great political background, and they're just very well done. I think this kind of content is missing in Pacifica because the whole station politically has moved much further into the neoliberal corporate Democrat core area. And we have lost the people on the left because they can as well listen to a better produced, NPR for this kind of middle of the road content. And we have lost the people on the left. And for that reason, I think we have alienated lots of our general listeners. So if we get one of these podcasts that is already being produced to make programming, and I think they would be very willing to do that without any additional cost, because this would be a mutually beneficial arrangement. And I know that some people here think that, oh, podcasts are a bad idea because they're just going to bring listeners to their own websites and then they know donate there. But this is actually the 21st century, and the idea of mutually beneficial work is especially in the internet community super important. So they will bring us listeners. They will definitely bring us a lot more listeners because they would bring their, 20, 30, 40,000 people to us as well. And so this is what I would suggest for a really good evening drive program. Thank you.
Sigrid, thank you so much for that. So I'd like to hear from others as well on the committee. Have we lost a lot of the left listening audience?
Heather, I'd like to hear the people who haven't spoken before me.
Who else?
I think Fred hasn't said anything, and other people who haven't said anything.
Go ahead.
I want to hear them.
Fred, would you comment about that?
This is Wally Jones. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Wally, yeah, sure.
Go ahead, Wally.
Okay. All right. Well, here at KPFT, we have really been struggling, and there, as we said before, the music shows had been carrying the weight, but right now, even those shows are struggling. And I'm really hopeful that, we've got a new building. We haven't been able to move, it's going to take some work before we can move into it. But, us being off the air, it makes it really hard to say exactly, what, is going to work best in Houston. I think there's still, a lot of support for music, and we're trying to build up the public affairs, but we've just got to, get our audience back. And that's the big thing that's hurting us.
Well, thank you. Any other comments?
Yeah, this is Grace for the stack.
Go ahead, Grace, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Although KPFK has seen decreasing vital statistics for over 10 years, and I mean a gradual decrease in gross income, net income, membership, listenership. This has been eroding over a number of years. However, there's another big factor, and that's according to the Southern California Broadcasters Association, the greater Southern California area listens to radio 60% of the time outside of the home. So that's mainly in their car. And we're a car culture here in the greater Los Angeles area, more than other areas. And so with COVID, where people were locked down and not driving as much, traffic got better, but radio listenership really plummeted. So that has to be taken into consideration as well, and how to overcome that. That's all.
All right. Heather, I wanted to speak, but I hadn't heard from Fred Dodsworth.
All right, Fred. Okay, go ahead, Jim.
All right. Well, I appreciate Philip's comments, And I'd like to hear from Fred too. You know, the issue of the health shows and the relationship, I've been watching these debates internally in New York for a long time. It dominated debates in the early 90s. One particular comment that I would share was by somebody who was a correspondent for various Middle East outlets, Barbara Nimri Aziz. She used to do a Middle East show in New York. And we were having a debate about that. She said, look, you know, like, you guys have to realize that what Gary's talking about is people feeling better, people feeling or dealing with their health issues better. Because remember, we live in a society where, I don't have to tell anybody here, we don't have universal health care. Now, again, there are arguments that Gary makes that I totally disagree with. You know, his stance on the vaccination issue, the stance on AIDS, HIV/AIDS with the vitamin C. My sister was a hospice nurse at San Francisco General. So, you know, I'm aware of the criticism and, frankly, my criticism completely of those kind of notions. But, you know, Gary at one point had 17,000 people an hour listening to him. I don't think any show on any station, and you guys in California and in the Bay Area can correct me, I don't think you've ever had 17,000 people an hour listening to any show. I mean, maybe your morning show has that amount of people. I don't know. We're going to find out about that because we do have a motion in to get this kind of information from the general managers. And I should add that if we were using Zoom, I could show you the statistics right now from New York. Because in New York, one thing we do see is the seven to eight slot has essentially grown to 6,000 to 10,000 people an hour listening to it. On one day, we have about 10,000 people listening to it. Amy usually gets about 4,000 to 5,000 people listening to her. And then Gary Null no longer gets that 17,000. He's in around the 5,000 to 6,000 range. And so is Lenny Lopate, who follows him. The issue of the afternoon drive is another problem because afternoon drive is, you know, the amount of people listening tend to go down. So the idea of what Philip said about playing with Democracy Now! Twice has indeed, I think, at one point Linda did that, and it's a good idea, frankly, because it, I know the way you guys deploy at KPFA, it sort of leads, you build it up and then it goes into the afternoon drive. And so it's not a bad idea. But Amy's cachet has declined, at least in New York. She's not getting the same amount of people that listened to her in the past. And I should note that the amount of money we make out of that show has declined. Now, with the ideas that Ziri talks about the gray zone and all that, I'm all for experimenting with that. We have to, you know, diversify the amount of different kinds of voices heard. The only thing that I would say is that the mission statement, particularly the latter part of it, doesn't define an ideological stance. It defines a sort of diversity of opinion in there. You know, we're not, I'm not making judgment calls on people who, you know, might be neoliberal or Marxist-Leninist or revolutionary internationalist. My concern right now is the other part of the mission statement says in the first paragraph, it showed the whole operation should be as self-sustaining as possible. Now, all of us know, I can certainly know since I've been following these developments for as long as a lot of people here, that one of the problems is what do you do when you have like a couple hundred well-motivated volunteers who come in and do shows, and some shows have been on for 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and they have declined to the point of the resonance that they make in terms of fundraising drives that they will raise usually $100 to $150 to $200 a month, okay, as opposed to other shows that raise more money. I know people don't like to evaluate shows like that in terms of money, but then how do you pay the bills? Because right now we're facing decline in revenue at each station that's quite severe. One idea that I think should occur is that we should be looking openly at what is the good shows in different stations that are strong and even weak and figure out how they might perhaps be imported into other stations, at least temporarily, to fill in the gaps. So there are shows in Berkeley that are probably very good that might deserve to be placed in shows in other stations, signal areas. Let's see what the resonance is. Not like what happened when the BAI was shut down and we just basically had KPFA piped in unredacted. So people in New York were hearing the news of California. Now, Grace's point about the issue of removing Gary Null and Christine Blasdale from the fundraising situation, which is what the impact of that petition is, and I say this as a director, it's my belief that the objective is to essentially force the situation to be even worse financially, because there's no way that New York can survive right now without that 50% of the money being made by those two people, because the other shows have quite jealously preserved their airtime for all sorts of reasons, you know, historionic justifications. You know, we're speaking to millions of people. One person once said that to me, saying, oh, a million people listen to me, right? And I said, no, actually 300. But, you know, so this is the kind of stuff that has to be honestly talked about in terms of listeners. Now, one thing I think we should advocate in this particular body is I think the general managers and program directors at the stations that exist right now should get on the air and honestly talk about these problems, particularly in the weaker stations, to their publics and let them know what's going on. Because we could have sudden surprises occur in the next couple of months because of the financial situation that are unpleasant to have contemplated, and that I think the goodwill of the public who pays and is willing to listen to us will support us. Finally, again, this is a statistic from New York. That's why I want to get the data from the other stations. 45% of our listeners are over 75 years old. Now,
terrible.
Exactly. And these kind of, and that is typical of a lot of the stations, including, I would might add, I bet you that's the same case in Berkeley, in Los Angeles, in all the different stations. And so we have no young people listening, because why? Grace and I argue about this all the time. Young people don't listen to radio. They listen
they
to their digital devices. That's a statistical fact. So
we
have
true.
To figure out how to change that to the better for the whole system. And there's a lot to learn from Berkeley, and there's a lot to learn from PFW, and there's frankly a lot to learn in the other stations too. As I say, Linda has done a good job in essentially developing a morning strip. That's pretty good. That's decent numbers for Pacifica. But the goal should be, in my mind, how do we get our audiences up really rapidly as fast as possible? And one thing that can help that is to exploit the reopening of KPFT, because I think that that's a perfect opportunity to rebrand. Now, I don't agree with Ziri on the question of, you know, I don't think the stations have gone neoliberal. I mean, I have been, you know, doing broadcasting for decades. I love doing, and I know you're a documentarian, so I love to do experiment with form. I don't consider copying the morning show clock of NPR counter-revolutionary. You know, I think that's a good clock to follow, the way they organize time. We have to teach people skills, radio skills. In Berkeley, they do it. Kudos to you guys, you know, because I know you have two programs. You have the one that Frank St. Sterling's involved with, and you have one that was in, I understand, perhaps Phillips you were involved with basically, I think you guys were getting $90,000 a year to train people. That's great. Other stations need to have shared with them those kind of skill sets, so the broadcasters are being trained. New broadcasters are being trained in skills of broadcasting, because that actually helps. Finally, one thing I discovered in New York in actually helping with the morning show slots is that I think we have to use bumper carts. That's a term, radio term, broadcast term, basically 30-second advertisements that one can play, an engineer can play throughout a show that advertise the next shows that are coming up. So, for example, if you're doing a show at 7 to 8, you know, oh, at 8 o'clock is Democracy Now, then at 9 o'clock is, Dreamweavers, then at 10 o'clock is, grassroots radio from Washington, et cetera. And then put throughout the whole programming grid for promotion to be played and creatively done that can encourage the listener to stay, because the main problem is time spent listening. We have to get more people listening to the stations in order, because that's usually when they will donate money. And the last point is the drive time issue. In New York, most of the people who listen in the morning show, I'd say 95% of them, are listening at home. Now, again, car culture is different in New York than opposed to Houston or LA or California. But people do drive their cars in the New York City area. So they're not talking about simple things like, hey, what's the traffic like in, you know, are there traffic jams? You know, they're not orienting and expressing their message to people driving in the morning. Like, you know, here's the problems you're encountering. Here is the, you know, traffic jams and the BQE or something like that. That's part of what a morning show should be. You know, anyway, those are simple things that I think can reinforce quality or, audience retention. But, the issue of jump-starting the stations and doing great rapid things in terms of audience building, I'm sort of curious what people think is possible right now. Thank you.
Thanks.
Egbert,
I kept hearing you say this is my last item, and then there were quite a few last items. But thank you for that.
Can I speak?
So who is that? Who is that speaking?
Egberto. But if somebody else that haven't spoken wants to go before me,
yeah,
I'll wait.
So,
well, this is Philip. I would like to be put on the stack again.
Philip?
Well, you can go ahead of me, Philip.
How about Fred? Go ahead, Philip. Yeah, is Fred Dodsworth there? Before we go to the next...
I'm here.
Who's that?
You asked Fred? If I'm here. I'm here.
Fred
this
Dodsworth.
Is Fred Dodsworth.
Okay, wonderful. So... we want to hear from you. We'll go to Philip. So I just want to mention to everyone, too, as food for thought. I'm going to wait on that. So go ahead, Fred. Go ahead, please.
You just asked if I was here, and I said I'm here.
Do you have anything you want to add to comments that have been made is the question.
No, this is my first meeting. It's a good time for me to listen.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Philip, go ahead.
Well, nobody has really responded to my statement that the actual dollars brought in, they use the word revenue with regard to Gary Null, and I have no doubt that his revenue numbers are 50% of the take during your fundraising drive, but how much of that is clear? How much are you paying Gary Null for those premiums? How much money is he making versus how much money is WBAI making out of each of those subscriptions, those memberships. I have a cousin in Los Angeles who's quite to the left, as am I. She stopped listening to KPFK when they started putting Gary Null on the air. She said, no way am I going to support snake oil. I'm mm-hmm. saying that the Gary Null model and a left political model are mutually exclusive, that in fact you're driving away people with politics by putting a guy on the air that tells people not to get a vaccine that could save their lives. I'm a gay man. Gary Null told people with HIV back in the 90s to not take their medication. How many people believed him? How many people died? I mean, people talk about this as health and spirituality. This is not health. This is, in fact, complicity in a racket. And this is something to be ashamed of.
Excuse me.
This is something to be ashamed of because you're in fact encouraging people to not get vaccinated. A million people just died of COVID in this country, And how many of them would have been saved if they'd gotten vaccinated? So again, this is not health and spirituality. We have a spiritual program on KPFA. I'm not opposed to spirituality. We have Alan Watts on KPFA. He of course had his entire career on KPFA. Alan Watts makes money for KPFA. I don't have a problem with that. But in the meantime, if you've got a guy on the air telling people not to get vaccinated, I mean, you might as well be Tucker Carlson. Why not? I'm done.
Zero to the stack, please. Zero, and then who? This is Egbert, so I was after Philip.
You remember I gave up my position because I said I had spoken already?
Okay, Umberto, you didn't go first, but this is Ziri, and I really have an urgent reply to what Philip just put on, out there, which is...
And I want to... I want to reply to Philip, please,
okay,
if you don't
go
mind. Okay, Philip, I hear you, and believe it or not, I am with you that I hate anybody's statements of disapproving of a drug for HIV patients. I hate anybody selling things that sort of, you know, or patently... whatever. I genuinely don't like that. I'm an engineer. I'm a scientist. And I agree with you. But I also came from Panama to come to America. And the truth of the matter is that I hear a lot of things on KPFT, KPFA, on all these stations that I don't agree with. In fact, I preach for the nationalization of oil, the oil sector. And there were people who called our general manager that said they will never give to KPFT again because they have a communist on air. Egberto Willis is a communist now. You know, so I mean, I get it. I really get where folks are coming from. I think there are ways to mitigate, I mean, without infringing on somebody. Like my statement was before, is the person doing something illegal or not? And if the person is not doing something illegal or not, just like I don't want anybody judging me when I say I am, and by the way, whoever said that we are not left enough must not listen to my program. I support Democrats, but I am very, very left. So, I mean, I think we have to be careful the reasons we go after somebody. Did he make a multi-million amount of money off of, and like I said, I'm a neophyte here, folks, but did he make multi-millions of dollars off of using WBAI's air? I don't know that, right? Maybe you guys do know that. But I can also name a few other people that became millionaires from using our public ears. My gosh, I wish that my notoriety on KPFT could make me a few dollars more. But the thing about it is, I believe most people at this darn station really love what we do as far as pushing the type of messages that we put, notwithstanding the music programs, of course. But I think we have to be careful. We have to be careful that our animosity towards what we don't like is not beneficial to the station as a whole. And so, Philip, I'm telling you, everything that you said there, I agree with you. I don't want anybody telling folks not to do vaccines. Somebody should be on the air immediately after him saying, take your damn vaccine. Somebody should be on the air afterwards saying, that is Noel's opinion, but this is what XYZ believe. As opposed to going to the FCC and putting our confounded license in jeopardy because we can't resolve something within our family. Thank you.
Thank you, Bertha. Okay, Siri, go ahead.
Thank you. Umberto, I totally agree with you that this petition should have never gone out, and whoever put that out there, and they know who they are, they should really be ashamed of themselves, because this is really exactly putting the station in general at risk. But I want to respond to Philip and also this way of judgment. You say, you are sad that a lot of old people are listening to the station. I'm one of the younger ones on the LSP. And you will not believe it, but in Los Angeles is a very big progressive young organization and group who are totally against the vaccines, you know. And so these are not Tucker people. These are not right-wingers. These are people who have continued the traditional stance of the left against big pharma and against government-induced overreach on our body. My body, my choice is supposedly a left stance. And what happened with COVID, it went out the window together with all our other normal civil rights, the right to assemble, the right to free movement, the right to free speech. Everything went out there, and the Democrats and the left went along with this, which is a huge disappointment. And it's the old people who like this, and it's us young people who feel we were thrown under the bus for this old population. And so there's a huge divide, and I think it's totally unfair to just say, oh, everybody has to get this vaccine. I happen to own actually some funeral homes in Los Angeles, and we have had more people die after the vaccine than we had die of COVID. And this is a fact, because we make the death certificate, so I can see this. So I'm very passionate about it. I won't bother you with these details. I just agree with Umberto saying we have to have an open conversation about different point of views instead of calling each other Tucker Carlson people when we disagree, you know. I mean, honestly, Philip, I think this is not very leftist of you to not be able to have a normal conversation about this and accept that other people just have a different point of view. That doesn't make us snake oil people. It doesn't make us right-wingers. So I would appreciate a little bit more openness there. Thank you.
Okay, everyone. I do want to mention that I don't know how long we're going to have this meeting. I'm thinking maybe for another 30 minutes. So that would be an hour and 30 minutes. Is that all right? That sound okay? All right, it's okay with. So I do want to ask, though, I think we're talking about the different kinds of programs we have in Pacifica Station, but and I am recording this. I'm going to transcribe the comments made today, which were really profound in countless ways. But I'm also thinking that one of the reasons that Pacifica has been struggling is that we have such a vast range these days of other media outlets, which challenges radio altogether. And I'm wondering how much radio programmers actually are promoting their programs on these other outlets. Does anyone know anything about that? Are they writing up?
Okay, yes, so I do.
This is great for the staff.
Interviewing such a person. Sorry, who was that speaking?
I said that I do. I mean, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is Grace. Well, can I be on the stack for to mention something different? But take Egberto first, and then I'd like to.
All right, Egberto. Then we're going to Grace.
Yeah, I said that I have my program, Politics Done Right, is a multimedia program. In other words, I have it going on on multiple platforms, et cetera, and it is one of the things that. We I think it's nothing special really. A lot of people do that, but it's something that I think we want to promote more, because when Dingerman says that our average listening age on the radio is 75 years old, right? Those people that age are usually dedicated. And if you take a look at who the donors are, they it's sort of muscle memory for them to donate. So just those numbers alone tell me that we have to expand the horizon to these other platforms, like, you know, like I am doing, but with more impetus from our leaders, if you will, from the network. In other words, whereas I am doing it singly, I think it should be more promoted on the local and national level, where we actually are doing this as a part of promotion. Let me give a quick example here, because one of the things I think we'd want to come out of here is not just talking about what our problems are, but also what kind of solutions we could have. So let me give one solution that I thought about earlier on, and that was to create a national multimedia team. And this national multimedia team will aggregate all the good stuff. Somebody earlier said, talk about bringing stuff from all the different stations, right? Aggregate that, all of that, into the Pacifica network itself. In other words, that would be, we get the aggregation of these good programs from these different areas, and that would be its own cost center. And what I mean by cost center is if you take a politics done right, a progressive forum from our brother Wale that's on the line right now, and take all these things and aggregate them on a station on its own, because we are Pacifica, right? It's not just KPFT, WBAI, KPFK, or whatever. And that be its own cost center, taking these programs and monetizing these programs. I think these are things that we can actively do right now and put it into the platform that others see. I mean, my program has a demographic of between 35 and 65, right? Somebody else may have a demographic of these other things. And by doing that from our multimedia team in, you know, the national multimedia team, and it's national doesn't mean they have to be in one place. They can be somebody working in each city or whatever, but form part of this new aggregation of our stuff. I think we could actually start by, one, that would be a form of advertising for all our stations, and two, actually monetize these contents under their Pacifica domain. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Alberto. So, Grace, go ahead.
Yes. First, I even though this is a difficult conversation, I think it's a really good conversation. And I'm glad that Philip is expressing his opinion in this a committee meeting. I think it's really necessary that we exchange ideas. And I think that in terms of KPFA, KPFK and WBAI and the other stations, WPFW and KPFT, really need help. We need communication. We need ideas. We don't need lawsuits. We don't need behind-the-scenes literal attacks like going to the FCC without letting anyone know beforehand. What about a dialogue about it, for goodness sake? There wasn't any. But anyway, I am glad that this line of communication is now open so we can express ideas and get them out in the open. Now, I do want to say something that's really important. We had a local KPFK Finance Committee meeting, and Julia, our interim CFO, sent us a little chart, which I forwarded to all of you. Philip, I don't have your email address, but I sent it to Heather and Fred and Jim and all the rest of you. This is what it says. This is the percent change year-to-date versus the prior year-to-date. So this is the fiscal year-to-date. That's from October through March, comparing 2021 to 2022. The consolidated revenue has gone down 21%. That's everyone. KPFA's revenue has gone down year-over-year by 22%. KPFK by 47%. KPFT, 19%. WBAI is up 10%. WPFW is up 3%. The national office is down 10%. The archives are down 25%. Okay. So why I'm reading this to you is we are basically all in the same boat. KPFA's revenue year over year for the first half of the fiscal year was down 22%. Okay. KPFK is in horrible straits. Our revenue is down 47%. We really have to work together. It's like if KPFA's revenue, if I saw that KPFA's revenue here was up 30%, I would say, great, let's just do whatever KPFA wants. They have the magic key or whatever, possibly. But no, there's a decline happening in Berkeley as well. We need to work together to figure out how to reverse our negative financial situation. And we're not going to do that by forcing a destruction of the income at two of our radio stations, KPFK and WBAI. So we need to work together. At least we're starting in this committee. I think that's really excellent. But please, I'm appealing to all of you, let's work together to improve the programming and to keep to the Pacifica mission. Free speech is really, really hard. We lose it in difficult times. We don't lose it in good times. We lose it in difficult times, like these times are very difficult. Once censorship enters in, we lose Pacifica, in my opinion. And I think that's what you're hearing from other people. And I understand the perspective. I disagree with Gary's viewpoints. I don't listen to Gary Null very much. I'm looking at this from a financial perspective. If you can figure out who can replace that 50% of the income, fine, take Gary off. Where is that 50%? It's not coming in just naturally. So, and it's not going to come in by erasing that programming, and all of a sudden, somehow, magically, the income is going to rise. Because if that were the case, we would see, we're not seeing tremendous upsurge in income at KPFA. KPFA is in trouble to a lesser degree, but nonetheless, the statistics show us that it's in trouble also. You can open up your email. This is not coming from me. This is coming from our interim chief financial officer.
This is Bruce.
Oh, hold on. Thank you, Grace. So, Bruce, okay, go ahead. Thank you.
I mean, I'm not a member of the committee, but I'm on the WBAI cab. And a couple of things, they're sort of like not necessarily related, but first thing, I'd like to put the Gary Null discussion on the table. I think, you know, that could be a never-ending story. And for the rest of the meeting, maybe we can talk about some other things. The second thing is that there's like an urban legend that young people don't listen to radio, and actually some of the Edison research and Coleman and the rest of it, they I'll get the articles together and send them to Jim, but young people are actually listening to the radio. They're just listening to it on their phone. And we don't make it easy for people to listen to KPFK on their phone. You see people walking around, their phones are on all the time. The young people are on with the phone all the time. We have to make it a one click, click on the app, and away we go, listen to the KPFK. And the second thing is, what are we putting on the air that young people want to listen to? And I'm 66, so I can say basically nothing. You know, we're not talking about student loan. We're not talking about job career prospects. We're not talking about anything that the young people are worried about. I have, you know, three kids, 26, 24, and 21, and, you know, I'm a political junkie, so Pacifica's a fit. But there's nothing on the radio that, you know, that really twigs their interest. So we need to figure out, well, what is it they would like to hear? And on the back of the mission statement, and you look at the bottom of it, and it talks about, you know, stuff like a comedy show or arts or a poetry slam. I mean, we just do politics, politics, and politics. And then the final thing is maybe turn the binoculars around. Instead of saying, oh, let's do a show on monarch butterflies and we'll find out how many people are interested, you know, go, well, where's the huge audience? So one of the things I've been saying is let's do a teacher's call-in show. The number of teachers in Los Angeles has got to be huge. And I'm not talking policy or wonk. I'm talking a couple of teachers to run the show, and they take an hour of call-ins from teachers around Los Angeles. What's going on in your school? What's going on with your superintendent? What's going on with your budget? And the same thing for nurses. And I bet you those shows would be a huge hit. And these people have money. You know, nurses and teachers have disposable income. So if they can hear the show at 8 o'clock at night, Wednesday or whatever time's appropriate, you know, they're gonna dial in and say, oh, I want to hear what the other teachers are saying, or I want to hear what's happening at the other hospitals, or we're going on a strike, so I want to hear from. That's it. I'm done.
Jim Tisdak.
Thank you for that, Bruce. So we have about 15 minutes left, and who wanted to be on the stack? Who was that? Sorry,
Jim.
Jim wanted to be on the stack.
Jim who?
Jim Dingman.
Okay, Jim, hold on just a moment. I just wanted to mention that I'm going to repeat myself here. No, I'm going to repeat myself at the end of the meeting. Go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, who was that who wanted to speak? Who was the other person who just wanted to speak?
Philip.
Oh, Philip. Oh, let me speak first of all. First of all, I have great respect for what, you know, I've always been a, I'm frankly a historian and, not necessarily of communications, but of other subjects. So I have great respect for what has occurred in California at both stations. I know the history pretty well. I've read every dissertation about, KPFA. Part of my family moved to the Bay Area back in the 60s. I stayed in New York. So, I have a great love for the Bay Area and I respect, Philip in making those comments. I really do. And, you know, we have to have these open discussions. Let me talk about practical things I think we should be doing now. I should get along pretty well with the former program director in New York, Andrew Phillips, who at one point went out and ran, KPFA for a while. One thing that we used to do back then was when a breaking news story occurred, like Roe v. Wade, we didn't wait to have a committee to form and talk about, you know, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 5 weeks down the road to do a 3 or 4 hour special. We did it immediately because the immediacy of radio is its mobility. Now, amen. I know that people are talking about a national show about Roe v. Wade. I mean, you know, the news programs on the mainstream have been beating that to death. And so I do not, you know, I am 100% in favor of such things, but where is the immediacy of doing something in depth when the breaking news story happens? Let's look at the war in Ukraine. The chair of the board in New York, and the other chairs, I don't think the person in Berkeley has participated yet, they've come up with an idea to do something that is in the mission statement, the last two paragraphs about alternative information. They want to do something about this situation in Ukraine and talk about war along the lines of the fact that the founders of Pacifica were pacifists. But again, the war in Ukraine. This has been going on and developing since last fall. So, for example, what I've been doing in New York is I said, you know, the hell with it. I'm not going to wait for the station to deal with this. You know, all the egos of producers that want to talk. I'm going to do it myself. So we've been doing something by Zoom for months since last year. And now we're having classes that are going to start participating in it. Now, that kind of stuff, I don't care who does it, but the immediacy of a war like this, which could result in nuclear war, again, this is something that should have been done or should be done, and people can tell me if there are other stations that did it. I'm sure Berkeley did a pretty good job about it. This should be dealt with right away. Boom. Like within as it's happening immediately. The issue of local news. It's very important. I've listened to this morning show in California, the one up in the Bay Area, and they do a great job talking about local issues that affect people in the Bay Area and in that area there. That is a very good model to adopt to do morning shows in other signal areas with volunteers. You know, now the financial crisis is so bad that, you know, in New York, I know we have about 5 paid engineers. They're critical to maintain the station. I don't think that same situation exists at KPFT. I don't know what it's like at KPFK, but you need good morning shows. You need good strip shows in the afternoon. And recently we, in the technology task force, we read through the Infinite Dial's latest technology study. And what that showed is traditional habits of morning show listenership is very different nowadays, especially after COVID, because if you don't have digital interactions with the show, in other words, using Facebook, using a Twitter account, bringing on people through Twitter on the air, et cetera, all those bells and whistles, you actually, because people are driving in cars that don't have normal FM, AM tuners like they used to, people are just doing their own listening. They're coming in with their own soundtrack. They're not necessarily tuning in to a show on a radio station. They're just going to say, ah, the hell with it. I'm going to come in with my playlist from Spotify, and that's what I'm going to listen to as I drive to work. So we have to figure out new ways to get over that problem, because that is another problem we have in terms of interacting with the audience in the 21st century. We're basically still dinosaurs in the 20th century when it comes to that. And again, the issue of kids, of young kids, I personally think, and I know in Berkeley, they were talking about setting up the cab with a bunch of kids coming in. I personally think that we should have an invasion of Generation Z, of teenagers, into the stations helping us, because they have skill sets that I certainly don't have, because they're used to using all the little gizmos. And, you know, that's good. That's good for us to work with kids like that, because they are equals. They can teach us things. And the sooner we get Generation Z involved, the better. Okay? And I'm respecting the fact that, as I said earlier, 45% of the listenership in New York is over 75. Not all of them. But those kind of demographics are true of all the stations. Their strengths and weaknesses. We just have to broaden ourselves out. We have to aim to get 500,000 people a week listening to each station. Then we would be having different fights. We'd be fighting about how to spend all the money we're making. All right, that's enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
So actually, some of what Jim was saying is relevant to some of the issues that I brought up, and not enough tonight, but I will in subsequent meetings. But I think we need to promote programs and other that we're having on the radio and other media platforms, so that when people get into their car, they know they can listen, for example, to WBAI about a certain issue or whatever. So I'd like to have more discussion. Philip.
I just had one more comment. Excuse me, Philip. Another problem is that something that Bruce just raised, the apps. I don't know what the app is in Berkeley, but one of the things that's important with apps is that they have to be well designed to each station, and they have to have push messaging going on. In other words, the amount of advertisements you get that say, oh, by the way, you can listen to this show that's coming into your iPhone or smart device. It's saying, oh, by the way, at 10 o'clock, there's this show that you can hit the button and listen to from KPFA. Oh, at 12 o'clock, there's this great show from K. I mean, that kind of stuff we have to develop, because that's another reason why the audience has gone down. We are backwards in using those kind of methods.
Thank you,
Fred Dodsworth.
Can
you hear me?
Who is this?
Fred Dodsworth with Zach.
I think Philip wanted to speak. Philip, did you want to speak?
Well, I just wanted to give Grace my email is Philip, 1L and Philip at kpfa.org. So it's an easy email. And I do want to hear from Fred, who hasn't spoken yet. But I just want to say nobody has responded to me about what is the net coming from Gary Null. You can have a tremendous figure of his revenue, but subtract from his revenue how much he charges you for those premiums. Does anyone else on your station sell you premiums in exchange you give him airtime? This is called totally irresponsible use of the airwaves, and it's not legal. So folks, get used to the fact that Pacifica is breaking the law.
May I
speak?
Okay,
so, Fred, is this Fred?
Yes, it is.
Yes, go ahead, Fred.
Okay, folks don't know me. I spent the last 30-plus years of my life as an editor, publisher, and a reporter. I've reported for magazines, newspapers, daily newspapers. I've been an editor the same way, and I've watched the industry change rather dramatically. One of the things that nobody's literally talking about is the role that an editor plays in coordinating all of this. The new model for daily newspapers, of which I've been involved with three of them, okay, the new model is that you have an editor and two reporters, and the editors for each one of the areas that the editor covers works with the other editors. For example, the Daily News here in the San Francisco Bay Area has, and even Media News when I was working there, they have like a dozen different newspapers. And each one of those newspapers only has two local reporters, not paid well, and one editor, and the editors coordinate it so that we get local news on every one of those newspapers. The seven different newspapers that are out there gets a little piece from each one of those outlying editorial offices. This is a role, this is a sort of thing that KPFA, or not KPFA, Pacifica could definitely use, but it requires actually having a news department. Unfortunately, these days, we don't seem to have a news department at most of our stations, and we're certainly not working together. We need a executive editor that works with all the local editors. If you want to offer that sort of stuff that was being proposed by one of the previous commenters, where they talked about local teachers and local news, then you're going to have somebody that actually organizes that. And right now, I don't hear this at all. I don't hear that there is any movement afoot to create reporters at all the other stations. Yes, it's great that we have something like Roe v. Wade to talk about, but that requires that somebody puts that package together and distributes it. I've heard people talk about how we need carts to advertise the other programs. That also needs somebody to organize it. And I don't hear any of that here. I don't hear anybody talking about the fact that you need an infrastructure to provide the sort of national and local, hyper-local news that each one of these stations will generate additional listeners from. You know, that's an incredibly important thing. Democracy Now! Is great, and I love Democracy Now!, and that can run. But why isn't every one of the stations doing something like Democracy Now! Dealing with the issues in their local area? Maybe Houston should be talking about the border. You know, maybe L.A. should be talking about global warming. You know, each one of these stations has issues that impact all of us, and I don't hear any real answers or really solutions that will get us that sort of national coverage and bring us back our listeners. Additionally, things like Democracy Now! Or Egberto's program are created as multimedia platforms. I read Egberto on Daily Cause, and there's no reason every one of our exceptional programs can't be done as a podcast. I know I've got grandkids all the way down to 2 years of age, and I've got children all the way down to 30 in their 30s. They listen to podcasts all the time. Every one of our stations can cover anything they want, including Gary Null, on a podcast that you can download and listen to on your phone. And I don't hear anybody really building, you know, the sort of infrastructure that we're going to need to do that.
I would love to respond to Fred. I think it's so important what he's just said. May I speak, ma'am?
Berto, hold on just a moment.
Yes, ma'am.
Fred, are you finished?
I would love to hear what Berto has to say.
Okay, I appreciate it. And I also want to say I appreciate you talking about podcasting, because that's something I was going to bring up as well. We can have more of a discussion about that in another meeting, though. But go ahead, Berto.
Fred, as you know, by listening to our show, we ain't get a hell of a lot of money, if any, at all right now. But given what you've just said, you've just determined, to me, what you've just done is made yourself the director of editorship of the Pacifica Network. No, I'm not kidding. I'm serious here. We need volunteers that are really ready for action, knows what they're talking about, who can lead and say this, let's go ahead and do that. This is a model that we can start following. Earlier, you heard me mention that central digital thing that I could see adapted within, maybe or maybe not, but adapted into the modal that you just spoke about. Those are the things that we need. I said one of the things we would want out of here are solutions. It seems to me right here you said you didn't hear those things. Well, guess what? I just heard those things. Where did I hear them? From Fred. Can you take that ball up? The group willing and run with that ball. Thank you.
Be
That's
careful what you ask.
This is Grace for the stack.
Buddy, I want to just ask, how do we decide when to have the next meeting? How do we make that decision? When do we want to do that?
Candidly, I don't care how.
Before we go into that discussion, as I said, I am recording all of this. And I'm going to transcribe all these wonderful ideas that have come from folks this afternoon. So now somebody wanted to comment about deciding on how we, when we have the next program meeting, programming meetings. Who was going to say that?
This is Grace. I'd like to suggest this same time 2 weeks from now. In other words,
okay, that sounds good. Is everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Let me check real quick. 2 weeks from now would be that being the 28th, right?
Yes.
I don't have the calendar in front of me, so 28th? Okay, great.
Yeah, that sounds like the 28th.
So now let's decide also, do we want to have this as a Zoom or a phone call?
Zoom.
I prefer Zoom too, but what's the opinion of others?
I prefer Zoom.
Is everybody okay with Zoom?
Zoom, yes, please.
Almost everybody.
Yeah, I prefer Zoom because then I could share data. Although I will say that if I share data, I'm perfectly willing to share data about WBAI, but I intend to get the data from the other stations too. So, because the last time I shared the data from BAI, I was the only person who did it, and nobody else did it, so I'm not going to have that repeated again. Anyway, yeah, I definitely prefer Zoom.
This is Grace. Can I, are we done with the meeting, or can I make a comment?
Go ahead, Nick.
Okay. I'd like to address something. I think the conversation is a really important one. I wanted to give a little bit of information, and that is that, and this may not be 100% accurate, but it's pretty close to accurate. At WBAI, Paul DiRienzo is a volunteer producer of the evening news at WBAI, and he does an excellent job with a lot of local news coverage. Now, you should know that WBAI has essentially a skeleton staff. They have two managers, a general manager and a program director. They have one paid programmer and one halftime, I believe, producer for that show. It's a key show. Other than that, there are no staff that I know of except for board operators. So when a station that has something like 34 staff tasks a station with almost no staff, you know, the board operators keep the station on the air. There's like four or five board operators at WBAI. So it looks like it has a bigger staff than it has. But essentially, the people who do keep the station going, decide on the programming, invent new programming, handle volunteers, all of that, it's just two people. That is what has to be understood. There is not a fleet. KPFA is a well-staffed station. WBAI, because of its huge overhead of $26,000 a month, that has to do with the tower rental, $18,000 a month, and their rent for their offices, which is about $6,000, $6,500 a month, that's a huge overhead that the other stations mostly do not have. So WBAI, when we say WBAI should be doing this, it should be doing that, it should be doing the other thing, please understand that dollar for dollar, they have the most productive staff in the network. And you can just take the full-time equivalents at WBAI and divide the gross income by that number of full-time equivalents, and you will find that WBAI has the most productive staff in the network. It's a skeleton crew. We need KPFK, WBAI, KPFT, and WPFW really need help. And we do not, attacking is not helping. This is a powerful network. Let's repair it and get it back so that it's a vital force in the United States. And understand these dynamics, these practical dynamics. Please.
All right. Jim Tinstack on the podcasting issue.
We're going to end this in a moment. Go ahead. Just brief.
All right. Just to deal with the podcasting issue, I've been involved in doing that practically now for several years since the pandemic began. And as Grace knows, Otis knows, we developed a show that we would like to have 7 days a week. And that would require a lot of collaboration with other people around the network. I mean, it would be a late night public affairs cultural news show that is oriented to the news of the day and has floating hosts, floating staff, et cetera, but would be 7 days a week. and it would be virtual. It wouldn't be tied to the analog, because one of the advantages of doing it that way is you don't have to worry about the seven dirty words. You don't have to worry about a lot of stuff that you normally have to do if you're doing it within the context of the analog radio broadcasting. But podcasting is something that, you know, I'm very much involved with, very practically involved with, and it has its good and bad sides. However, the power it has is if we were actually opening up our facilities to train people in terms of broadcast skills, radio and sound aesthetics, et cetera, we could actually be doing something that is unique in the country, because other stations down the street from us at WNYC, they were getting $10 million a year from NPR and CPB to develop all the different podcasting stuff that they were doing, because that's the flagship station of NPR in the country. But we were not able to get a penny for that, because we have been involved in internal fratricidal fights for the past 15 years. So if we were able to have a ceasefire on that, we could perhaps be doing things better in general in these constant fights, which are a way
of... I got to go to another meeting.
Period. Thank you.
I got to go to another meeting, but I have to say something. I need to say something. If I beg to give me just one quick statement to make with regards to Brother Philip.
We all need Brother to see Philip, something.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll shut up. Go ahead.
No, who was that? No, we're going to end this meeting, but who was that? Was that Egberto, right? Was that Chris?
Yeah, but somebody said we all had to have something, so I wanted to, you know, just go back.
No, I think we're going to end the meeting, but I tell you what, everyone, I think everybody has my email address as well. So if I'm going to, as I said, I'm going to work on transcribing the call today, and I'll be sending this out to folks. But if you have any additional comments or anything else that in writing that you would like to share with the group, please send your comments to me, and we'll send, or to the whole group, send it to the whole group, whatever. So I'm wanting to thank everyone so much for this call today and for all your great work, actually. Thank you so much. So,
for the stack, I got a 30-second thing.
All right, go ahead. 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Three recent events that I think give Pacifica a branding opportunity like you couldn't ask for better. PayPal kicked Mint Press, Consortium News, and a bunch of people off of their platform to collect subscriptions. So PayPal kicked off these alternative media organizations. Elon Musk bought Twitter. And now we have the National Disinformation Bureau, or whatever it's called. And if any of you have seen the crazy lady they picked to chair it, you know, she's off the chart. So Pacifica is the only independent voice left that can't be censored. You know, they cannot censor the airwaves. And I think we should be beating the drum about that left, right, and center. That's it.
Thanks so much for that. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for all your amazing comments. And I look forward to the next meeting on the 28th. All right.
Thank you so much, Heather. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh, no. My pleasure. Thanks for your great work.
Egberto, did you want to say what you wanted to say, even though the meeting's over? You're there, Egberto?
He might be gone.
Oh, okay.
All right.
All right, everyone.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone. Peace.
Thank you.
Thank you. Goodbye.